This is episode 15 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
2% doesn't sound like much. But 2% of the entire planet, of every person on it, that's more than the world's 10 largest cities combined. It's 140 million people. And like that, they were gone.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so are you, so let's talk to Ann Dowd. Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn. When your friends are gone. When your friends won't come. So show me where you fit. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I have been dying to get these interviews out.
I know.
I've been dying to get, like, I've been teasing them left and right, and here we are. We're back. We're getting back into leftovers mode. We got some really good stuff for you.
We've got a lot of good stuff. Well, we just want to welcome everyone back. We are so excited to be podcasting again about The Leftovers with some of the best actors on the show. And we are happy to announce that this is the first of three. That's right. Three. Emmy series interviews we will have this week. So you know what? You better be subscribed in iTunes because we're going to be sending out three. Blake, what do we mean by Emmy series interviews and who are we having on after this?
Well, first of all, we are having today Ann Dowd, who we all know is Patty Levin of the GR.
Who we used to call Mama Hen.
Yeah, that's true.
Before we knew her name.
The idea behind the Emmy series is that when this recording comes out, the nominations will be announced for the Emmys very soon. And we thought, hey, wouldn't it be an awesome idea to get all the people that are potentially going to be nominated for The Leftovers, for our wonderful listeners, to have them on the show and have them talk about them and their characters, what it took to get their characters to come to life. And here we are. We got them all.
We did.
So we have, first, today is Ann Dowd, like I said. Second, we will be having Christopher Eccleston, who we all know as Reverend Matt Jameson. And thirdly, but certainly not least, is the wonderful, unbelievable Carrie Coon.
We got three dynamite characters for you guys.
So trust me, you're going to want to stick around for all of this because, wow, man, it took some hard work to get it done. And we got them all here. You know what? I can't wait. Let's just... Want to get into Ann Dowd?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
So joining us today is Ann Dowd, a fellow New Englander. I'm going to say it like that. That sounded Australian then. But she's a fellow New Englander and an extraordinarily talented actress who has appeared in many shows such as Law and Order, Masters of Sex, True Detective, and Olive Kitteridge, as well as major films like Compliance, Side Effects, Marley and Me, and Garden State. But we all know her as Patty Levin, the silent and intimidating leader of the Guilty Remnant on our favorite show on HBO, The Leftovers. Thank you so much for joining us on The Living Reminders today, Anne.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
So we want to know, when were you offered the role of Patty, and did you read the book The Leftovers before taking the role?
No, I auditioned for it. I read the script. I did read the script. I thought it was very strange at first, and I didn't understand it, which is not to my credit. I'll say that right off the bat. I was intrigued by it, but I thought, no, I don't. What do you mean disappeared? What's going on? And I didn't. I'm thinking, okay, she doesn't really talk. I thought, but something about it was very interesting to me. The power in not speaking. I thought, wow, I've never done that, and the mystery behind her. What in the world went on in her life that brought her to this place? And then learning little by little as the season went on, more and more about her. and about what the Guilty Remnant was up to and what their whole point was. It was a fascinating... Oh, but that doesn't answer your question. So I did not read the book first. I read it after I got the role. Yeah, and I got cast, maybe... And when I was first cast, I was not a seasoned regular. I was cast as a recurring. The difference, I'm sure you know the difference, mm-hmm. of course. So I thought, okay, well, this will be fun. You know, I'll do this or whatever. And then they turned, before we began shooting, it became a series regular, and I was thrilled. Then I thought, oh, wow, this is going to be a long stay. Let's find out. I mean, let's see if we can figure out what's going on. You get certainly some things from the book. Tom is wonderful. Damon is wonderful. And you'll ask, and they'll tell you if you have confusion or you know, you want to get some information, they're ready to tell you. But you ask. They don't just pile it on you. You know, you ask the questions. And I found myself not wanting to ask very much. I love the having it being revealed slowly, because then you absorb it slowly. And it was really a phenomenal experience that first season.
What kind of research did you have to undergo to capture that essence of not speaking while you're acting? You already mentioned that. And did you have any prior roles to help this effort, or was it just something so different from anything you've ever seen that you just said, oh, I can't wait to do this?
Well, it scared the wits out of me, because you realize how much you rely on words to get your point across. And you're a deer in the headlights if you don't know what it is you want and how you're going to achieve it without words. It's very powerful and challenging. And then I just loved it. Because think about it. Not speaking is an incredibly powerful thing to do. It creates immediate silence. And you're in charge of what you're doing. And as an actor, the hardest part was, you know, it really takes you back to what are the basics of acting. What do you want? Essentially, what is it you want to do to that person in front of you? And so once you got that clear, you're able to take your place on the set with some confidence. It was hard to then begin to speak after a while, because I got to know her so internally as a non-speaker, and also trying to understand the Guilty Remnant. At first, I thought, who in the world would ever join that? I mean, how desperate. I mean, tell how desperate you are. Then I realized what it was, from my understanding. This event happens. That is, there's no explanation for it. There's no rhyme nor reason to it, meaning who's taken, who isn't. It's not like the good guys went and the bad guys stayed back on Earth. It was random. Some, you know, a whole family on Earth. People who are driving a car, a baby, you know, a baby in utero. It was just like, whoa, nobody spared. You know, you just didn't know. So that creates, of course, panic. And you're confused in a situation in life that is cataclysmic and overwhelming to try to get back to a normal way of living. Oh, come on now. Something bad happened, but we can do it. It wasn't an earthquake. It wasn't a devastating phenomenon that we can all relate to. It was unlike anything. And if you accept, as the Guilty Remnant did, that life as we knew it is over, over, don't cling on to it. Don't try to go back to it. There is no point whatsoever. Then something happens, a level of, like in life, if you accept it and you're not resisting, you stop spinning. You just let go. And that was the credo for the Guilty Remnant. Denial was their enemy. Is their enemy. And their desire was to bring that reality to everybody they possibly could. And so the non-speaking, the joining of the Guilty Remnant, the eating in community, wearing whatever white is available, the whole goal was, it's what Patty says in episode 8, to let go of attachment, to keep ourselves focused, distraction away from us, let it go. And death is the result of that, is the ultimate result. Dying is a good thing. Now, I am not a person who particularly, I'm afraid of death, you know. I want to hang around for a long time. I want to be with my kids. My husband, I want to work. But I totally got where she was coming from. And Damon helped me. It was little by little. For instance, I said to Damon, well, but why is it important for the kids? Why do I want Kevin to kill me? You know, what's going on? I said, well, remember, first of all, because when you join a religion, a cult, you know, you, as an actor and as a person, you want to know about it. What is it? And he said, remember, it's a new religion, so they're putting it together. Kevin and I were in tremendous conflict. Kevin, meaning Justin Thoreau, who's the complete and total prince on every level. You couldn't find a better lead for your show. He's such a gentleman and a hard worker, and he's a good actor. And so we found our way together there. And there was first, of course, conflict between them. Why? Because he's trying to create peace between the guilty remnant and the rest of the town. We don't want that. We do not want peace. We want it to explode. We want this nonsense of trying to go back to this way of life that is over. We want it to stop. And we had to push people to their absolute limit, to the where they would explode, where it would go up in flames. That was the goal. And so Kevin was the peacemaker. And no, don't do that. He was trying to protect us. We don't want protection. We want the conflict, and we're going to take it.
It seems rather unnerving in a way, and almost as much as not talking is unnerving, I think, for an actor and for a character as well. Would I be right in saying that?
Well, that's the thing. That was the power in it.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful, and it drove him crazy, Kevin, because he's like, I know you're not going to answer, and you know, blah, blah. It's just tremendously, what a statement not to talk. What a statement. My little son, we adopted a year and a half ago. You know, he had six homes in 7 years of his life. First 7 years of his life. He's 10 now. And so no control, you know, and you can imagine the issues that go with it. And there are times when he just wouldn't speak because that was the only control he had.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very powerful. So I got it. You get it very quickly. Try it. Try not speaking for an afternoon, or try it for an hour. And just because you're going to draw immediate attention because people are like, okay, what's going on here? What's the problem? And they're, you know, and Patty is, you know, devoted. And the thing about her also is when you learn what happened to her in the past, in episode 9, when you find out, because I didn't know the extent to which I knew that Amy Brenneman had been Patty's, so Lori had been Patty's therapist, psychologist, psychiatrist, whatever. But the level of her horribleness, you know, horrible life, or she had a terrible, Damon had told me, a terrible childhood, Patty. Neglect parents. Parents had just never told her she was worth anything. So you get as wonderful parents, but can you even imagine? for 1 second, not telling your son good work, or look at you, or the way you look at your baby. It's so basic. I love you. You're the greatest thing that ever happened. And nothing about you will ever change that. Daddy never had it. So she comes into the world limping. She marries and someone who couldn't care less about her. No, that was abusive. And was told her she was nothing. So then this anxiety begins, and it's awful, and it's overwhelming. And Patty's going to the therapist. Help me, help the therapist. Saying, listen, your problem is, you know, you're with a creep and you need to get the strength to leave him and all these things. And she's saying, no, it's not that. It's not about him. Something horrible is going to happen. And everyone keeps talking, you know, no, we'll get some medicine and you'll see. Well, then when something does happen and she knew all along that it would, that turns her into a different person. I am worthy. I did know. I do understand. I get it, and I always did. And that just turns her life into something, a rocket ship to whatever the goal is. And in this case, it's to wake everybody up. Let's get on with it and stop your nonsense. that was very empowering to learn that about her.
It sounds like it. Now, you've mentioned how confident Patty is and how you really had to get that across, even without words. So I want to know for you how it felt to act as Patty, you know, someone who is filled with such confidence and yet guile.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, thank God for acting, because it's definitely intimidating. But, you know, here's the great thing about doing the series. And we had to remind ourselves that Kevin, poor Kevin, you know, he's in every damn thing last season, pardon my language. You know, the guy was exhausted, and everything, in the end, it's all revving towards something huge, and more is expected of us. And how do you maintain, how do you not get overwhelmed? And then we reminded ourselves, hey, we know them now. Each episode, we know more. So the reason you and I can walk around in our lives behaving as who we are, it's because we know who we are, and we know what we want in our lives. We know who's our friend. We know who we don't associate with. All of these things are getting to know who we are. And so knowing Patty week by week, I could step into her shoes, and she was there to help me. I mean, it depends on how you look at acting, but I'm a big fan of knowing that that person written by a creative individual, and Damon and Tom are off the charts in that arena, and our other writers, that is a human being created. And they are there in spirit to begin with, in the text, in the words, and then you get to know them. You know, it's a friendship at first, and then it becomes something much stronger. And then you're speaking for that person, and you're behaving in a way that will get that person's goals moved forward. And so she was I just came to respect her tremendously and relied on her. You know, show me the way, girl. What are we looking for here? It's scary. Acting scares me to begin with. A little less so now, because age gives you perspective. But, you know, I just relied on her, and I looked at those words when I did have them. And if I didn't, I said, okay, what do we want in this situation, and what are you going to do to get it? You're here to do this job, and if you commit to it, Patty's going to be all over it. You know, I hope I'm not sounding too vague, but really, it is a process of knowing. And when you know something, there's comfort in it, and there's confidence in it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So speaking of those goals, about Patty's goals, talk about that unbelievable sacrifice in the cabin during Cairo. You know, is this something that Patty always intended on doing, or was it a quick strategizing at that very moment to put Kevin in
the that's a great question. I love that question. It's smart. Well, death could come at any time, because once for everyone in the guilty remnant, the knowledge that death could come at any time, and that is a great thing, death, in our world of guilty remnant. That's why, you know, when Gladys became a martyr, and I asked her to do that. Patty asked her to do that in the beginning of the episode. Remember that? Episode 5?
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, we're in the office and our heads are bent down and we're talking stuff. I'm saying, you know, I think you're ready to move on. It's a goal, death, and it can come at any time. What Patty wanted was for Kevin to kill her, because that would have been a very strong move for the guilty remnant. He loses control, and he kills Patty. And Kevin is a big goal for Patty, because he's the head of the chief of police. He's the chief of police. You follow? So that would have been a big coup.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have, you know, it could have happened in that driveway when they took Patty in the first place. You know, she could have been stoned and left in the truck or dumped somewhere. So she knew that it could happen at any time. She was prepared for death, no question. As I said, she wanted him to do it in that cabin. That would have been perfect, but he didn't. And she kept trying to get through. And when she didn't, and it was over, and I couldn't reach him and convince him, I did it myself.
We always referred to Patty as, you know, the Ben Linus of The Leftovers. I'm not sure if you watch Lost, but I think it's fairly applicable. With that in mind, what allowed Patty to go from the mental health patient to this ultimate mastermind that you're talking about by this great coup, and then realizing that she could just do it herself?
Well, again, I think when you go through something that is felt like a hard life, people who are go through challenges, and you see them, and then something makes sense to them. They have meaning in their life suddenly. All of their life has been a struggle, and everyone said, oh, shut up. Stop it. Be quiet. Who cares what you think? And suddenly, something that you're feeling so deeply inside, and everyone is denying, it happens, and you become a leader. You have found your work. You have found your meaning in life. You were chosen. You know, you can say, God spoke to me, though I did both of not words that Patty uses. But it's that thing of, okay, I'm a crusader. I'm a warrior. And now I know my purpose in life. And that is a galvanizing, riveting experience. And it turned her from victim to warrior to I am not afraid of anything, especially death. Death is a joy. And I know what suffering is. Forget it. That part of my life has ended. It's a thrilling thing.
I'm getting chills hearing you talk all about this. I mean, she's such a difficult character for the audience to wrap their minds around because,
right. You
know, I didn't know if I was going to like her, if I was supposed to hate her.
Right.
And it was difficult. And, you know, one of the most powerful scenes was that sacrifice scene because you were really rooting for both Kevin and for Patty because you were seeing it as Patty's kind of crowning moment. And I wanted to know what it was like to shoot that scene. It was very difficult to watch as a viewer. And I wanted to know how that scene was accomplished. Obviously, it was very bloody. And I didn't know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, you know, first of all, I can tell you without the slightest exaggeration, it was one of the most extraordinary experiences of my life. Something happens, you know, when you begin acting, if you're in high school or junior high, wherever you are, some people start early. What you rely on is, I know what this is like. I'm going to pretend, make believe to be that person. And you know how children are when they play? You know, they're in the moment. They're in it. If you say, oh, that castle over there, that tree is my castle, and that chair, now turn it over. That's the turret, and you can't, you know. Well, you don't have to convince them. They don't need paint and wood. That's in their imagination. They go there, and they defend it, and they act as if they are right in front of it. You know that, seeing them play? You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
It's a beautiful thing. It used to bug me when people said, well, you know, children know how to act. I'd be like, you know what? They don't, you know. I mean, come on. No skills. They just, well, they do. They know make believe better than anybody. As you grow older as an actor, it's less fresh in that regard of being able to get right back into the moment. It's true in all parts of adult life. You just become desensitized to the magic of it, you know? And so you're always trying to get back to that. I want to be in the room talking to this person in this moment as Patty with no separation of self and Patty. And I want to talk directly to Justin, Kevin. And that is what happened in that room. And I'll tell you, I have never had such an extraordinary experience as that time in the cabin. We are up in the woods, Saxon Woods. It is pelting rain. There's thunder. How about how fabulous is that?
Mm-hmm.
The crew is so astonishing. I can't say enough. The extraordinary people on our set who put it together for us. So we could be in that dark, and the person who designed that cabin and then made it. I can't tell you. It was like magic. And I had worked. I was deeply, deeply sad that Patty was going. It broke my heart because I went from not getting what the hell this thing was all about to becoming deeply attached to it and attached to the way they communicated and the way whenever she did speak, how she spoke. I just thought, wow. I want to know more about her. And then I'm finding out that I'm going to kill myself. That took me really by surprise. And I was really grieved it, but you don't have much time to grieve it because you got to move on. You got to do it. You know, we're going to shoot the episode. Damon was lovely in the emails. I love him. And you know, just the story's going to go where the story's going to go. That's what a great writer does. You can't say, well, I want to keep her around because No, she probably doesn't want to die in it. She probably, you know, you can't be thinking of those things. You have to stay with the story that's in your gut. So the process that I went through in preparation to play that scene is the process that Patty went through, which is let go. I say, and I have goosebumps because it was one of the most extraordinary experiences of my life. I kept saying, baby, let go. You want to attach to the story. You want to attach to the series. You want to attach to all of your wonderful castmates and your crew and Damon. Let go. Mm-hmm. Let go of the attachment. Let go of wanting and accept what it is. And the more I did that, the more I got right in line with what the heck she was doing. So to be able to then play it in the room was mind-blowing. The wonderful special effects people, the tube of blood or whatever they do, I don't want to break your, you know, third wall or fourth wall imagination here. They just know how to do it. And they told me what to do. Here's how. You know, they're there to help. That's the thing. Everyone was right there. The wonderful director, Michelle McLaren, you know her from Game of Thrones and you know her from Breaking Bad. She was phenomenal. Michael Grady, our DP, everybody were there to just show you, here's how you work this. Here's how this special effects is that. You know, it was a team effort. It was extraordinary. And then there's Justin Theroux, who I am now attached to for life, because when you go through that kind of thing, you just, it's extraordinary what goes on. It was a tremendous experience.
It sounds like it. And it came across. I mean, it was so, so powerful. I wanted to actually rewind a little bit about what we were talking about with the spoken scenes versus the silent scenes. I wanted to know a little bit more about how you changed your approach between the, you know, the different scenes, whether you were speaking or not, in order to create a more powerful contrast between the two. So kind of what was your process like when you had to differentiate between speaking and not speaking?
Well, from what I remember, there are essentially three episodes in which Patty talks. The first one where the pilot, where she just says, here's the way it's going to go. You're welcome here, Meg. You know, so-and-so will help you. I'm not going to talk to you again. So, you know, just get a little intro there. So that was fine. You find your way there. Same thing you do with acting. In any, you know, speaking or not, what do I want? Well, in that case, I want to get through to Meg that she's welcome and I want to calm her down, and then I want to set her up with the rules. You know, that's the goal. So then, and then just appearing in little bits and not talking, that was at first strange. I thought, well, how am I going to have an effect on anything? And I thought, well, honey, think about it, will you? Come on now. Step up to the challenge. And it just became, and that was, as I said, if you prepare before you arrive at set, do your homework. When I got there, I would just get quiet for myself and just be in a space where I knew if I just looked and listened, that was the big thing. Remember to listen very carefully because that unnerves people too. People aren't really listened to that much. We get a few phrases and then we stop and people babble back and forth. Well, no. Listen carefully. Let them know through your intention and that's in your whole being. I don't believe in you. You're not welcome here. Get out. I'm not changing my way. Because you don't like it, get out of my house, and I'm going to come find you, because I'm not going away. It was wonderful to be able to do that silently. That's just with full being intention. You know, do you do it with, probably you don't. Your kids are not old enough. I have a special needs child, and any child, doesn't have to be special needs. When you ask them to do something, and or they're tantruming, and they're not in control, you don't engage emotionally with them at all. You stay present. You let them know you're here. And how do you do that? You're looking at them, and you are there not to judge, but you're just letting them know, honey, I'm not going to participate in this tantrum. I'm not going to fight you. I'm going to keep you safe, but you're going to have to get through this. It's the same thing, and it's riveting. They realize, oh, I can't talk my way out of it. She's not changing her mind. She's here. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like Patty felt like she was dealing with children almost as it related to everybody else not in the guilty remnant?
I think she took the approach of they don't get it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going away. Well, there was a parental element in that. Now, Kevin, I meant to mention it because we both had the same feeling and we spoke of it later. And of course, speaking Yates, I mean, come on, how lucky can you get?
That was. I actually watched that in preparation for this interview, and I have to admit, it brought a tear to my eye yet again. And getting back in the mental place of the leftovers, and it was, oh my God, not to fangirl all over you here, but you did an excellent job.
Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. But here's what I wanted to say, and here's what I would say, not but. It was a love story. That's how it felt to me. And Justin felt the same. It was a kind of love story in that room. And that has tremendous power, because it is the most powerful thing, period. And so to realize, wow, that's what that felt like. That was just extraordinary to come to that place. And I mean, put Patty and Kevin together. I don't mean in the traditional sense of a love story, clearly. But to go back to answer your question. So then to have to talk, that was hard. Mm-hmm. Because, I'm kind of getting used to writing and, you know, not speaking. So then, you just say, okay, so let's look at the words. What is the text telling us? What does she want? Okay, she wants to see if she can get Lori, because Lori's important in that GR. Lori, we need Lori. And so she's seeing, you know, that whole thing with Gladys, and, you know, it's scaring her, and Meg, and they have that friendship now, and I need her to be steady. So I'm going to see I'm going to test her commitment. I'm going to see how far she's, you know, how is she in still? Is she stable? What's happening? So again, you stick to what do I want? All right, I want to check things out with her. I'm going to invite her to talk. Come on. We're at a nice little old restaurant here. You can order something off the menu. Just try to bring her out a little bit, see if I can assess her. So again, sticking and then kind of like, oh yeah, talking's kind of fun too. I forgot that. That's fun. I can do that. I understand it. Mimi Leader, that was her first episode that she directed. She was terrific. Love her. So that. And then I had time. Time is our friend on a series. Because to me, the scene in the cabin, that whole episode played like a play in a way. I don't even know what I mean. Do you understand what I mean by that?
Well, there was one thing I actually wanted to get on with you about this. Is you mentioned it was almost like a love story between Patty and Kevin in an unconventional way, and you said it wasn't traditional. What I want to know is, in what way did you interpret it to be a love story?
The heart connection, mm-hmm. deep and real. Two people in commune, communion, excuse me. Two people in communion, two people in intimacy. And that's, to me, a love story.
Mm-hmm.
As intimacy is a rare ground to stand on, very hard to achieve. They came into the same soul for a little bit there.
Television and film seem to be starting to trend to more powerful women characters, and especially like some characters like Patty, which, in my opinion, and I think in my wife's opinion, is an extraordinarily great thing. Do you feel that you helped this process by playing Patty?
You know, that never occurred to me, to be perfectly honest. I was thrilled to be able to play it. I've had the pleasure of playing privileged, strong women. I don't think I helped it. Well, I helped it, I guess, in the sense that I played it. But I don't think I did anything. You know, it's people who write them. That's, you know what I mean? It's the people who write them and then put them up there that I think are the helpers. I just jump in and do my part, which is to play them and play them with respect. You know, I'm so happy to. It's just so nice to play a strong person. Do you know? Because women are strong. I mean, one and one is two, as they say. I'm sorry. I'm kind of not answering your question, but you get my point.
Yeah, well, I guess let's reframe that question then. Do you think that Patty is a good contributor to this?
Yes, I think Patty is, for sure.
Okay.
Patty, yes, definitely. Not my, you know, thing, but Patty, that role of Patty, yes, I think that you can have a strong kind of really unusual and not necessarily appealing character have an effect on a story. I think that's a very powerful thing, and I think she does achieve that, yes.
Speaking of having an appealing character, this question is about you. Did you want your character to be liked by viewers or hated, or did it matter to you at all?
No, it did not matter. I gave up long ago on that little journey because it's irrelevant. To want to be liked is a very dangerous place for an actor to be, and God knows we fight it all the time. I wanted her to be understood, not liked or disliked, but understood. Because with understanding, it just comes clarity, and then feel how you feel. But I wanted her to be understood.
Now, in real life, would you want to be part of the guilty remnant if something like The Departure happened or something similar? Or would you want to move on like the rest of society?
Well, I'll tell you right now, the thing I could not wrap my head around would be to leave my kids and my husband. Mm-hmm. That creates such anxiety in me, the very thought. Like Lori does, I never could think about that aspect of it because it just created immediate anxiety. So I don't think I'd have the strength personally. Now, had I lost my family in The Departure, I might have been able to embrace it fully because, I think of, when I think of the Guilty Remnant, and I think of the town that we named, that we wanted to have their parades and let's do a memorial and let's have a remembrance day and all of that. That would have driven me personally crazy. I can't stand that jibber jabber, and it reminds me of suburbia, not to put down people's lives, but the flatness of that existence. Things will be fine. I'm going to keep my lawn manicured and I'm going to go to the mall, and then on Saturdays we're going to do that. I can't embrace that. So that part of the Guilty Remnant of, okay, can we just let go of that now, please? That I could have embraced, but it's the essential sacrifice of leaving family and what to just live, in a community of like-minded individuals. Because when you walk into that house, remember those scenes? You're like, oh, boy, that looks like fun. Lying on the mattress, everybody sleeping. You know what I mean? Getting your potted gruel, whatever it may be, you better be heart set and ready. So it's a little of this and a little of that for me.
Well, Anne, thank you so much. We've taken up a lot of your time. And
what a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you so much.
I'm so glad you were able to join us. And, your acting was unbelievable. You really sold the season for us. I mean, we loved to hate you, which was great.
I'm so grateful to you. I can't tell you. My pleasure. I hope we have a chance to do it again. I really do.
Once again, thank you to Anne Dowd, HBO, and friend of the show, Dylan Shuck, and also our friend Brian, for helping contribute to our questions.
Wow, what an interview, right?
That was awesome.
That was great. The thing that I found most interesting that she brought to the table was the fact that she considered her relationship, well, Patty's relationship with Kevin, to be almost a love story in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Albeit an unorthodox love story, but still, regardless, love. How amazing is that?
Love is the deepest emotion, in my opinion, that you can feel.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I think that what they were able to feel was so incredibly deep.
That connection that they
yes,
had.
Yes, yes. Wow.
It was more than just, you're the sheriff of this town and I'm kind of your foil. I'm the GR leader. It was something that they had just deeply and utterly connected on as two people, especially within that cabin scene when she is forcing him to realize what's happening around her.
Oof, I'm getting chills. I'm getting chills again.
I know, right?
My gosh, what an incredible interview. I'm just so happy that we were able to speak with Anne. And her character already had so much depth, but now to hear Anne's perspective and just kind of more what went into it makes me just want to watch the whole season all over again.
Oh, we're going to.
Oh, yeah.
We're before the second season starts. By the way, how about that teaser for the second season?
Oh, my God.
That teaser was great. It told you everything you needed to know.
Including that you need to move to Texas.
For whatever reason. It's an interesting premise. And obviously, at the time of this recording, the show has not come out yet. We have not seen what the story is behind it. But I got to tell you, I am that much more intrigued about the second season than I was maybe even about the first.
So now we're all in this together.
We're all in the dock here. And, I mean, what are we going to do? Why in God's name did not one person from this little tiny Texas town not depart?
And does God have anything to do with it? We do not know. Speaking of God, coming up next is going to be our interview with Christopher Eccleston,
who we all know as the Reverend Matt Jameson.
Very excited to have him on.
Oh, and his character, you know, it was great because Anne talked about not speaking in that role, getting in that mental place of having to really commit to that role. And what Christopher Eccleston mentions in his future interview with us is that there was a lot of things that came true and that came forth in order for him to become part of the Leftovers. And I'm just going to leave it like that. It was almost serendipitous.
Ooh, good. Good word.
You like that tease?
I do.
That's
I
a professional
really do.
Tease right there. Okay. My game, I'm like Anakin Skywalker meeting with Count Dooku. My powers have doubled since the last time we've met.
Wow.
Doubled, baby.
Doubled. Oh, you guys are in for a treat.
I can't wait to get back to the next season here. Well, anyways, my love, you want to close the show out?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
So just as a reminder, you can find any and all information about all of our podcast episodes where we do recaps of the shows and other awesome interviews and all of our social media stuff at thelivingreminders.com. Now, all of our social media handles, that's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, are Living Reminders. So please reach out to us. Be part of the conversation. We would love to hear what you think about this interview.
And if you want to get us on the email machine, you can reach us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Thank you all so much once again for tuning into this very special interview. Don't forget, we have Christopher Eccleston coming up next.
And then Carrie Coon soon after that
episode. So make sure that you are subscribed. If you use iTunes or Stitcher, hit that subscribe button so that automatically these podcasts are sent to your mobile device.
And hey, if you want to do us a favor and maybe review us on iTunes because you loved this interview and you thought it was fantastic, that Anne Dowd ruled, which she does, mainly one, because she's awesome, but two, because she's from Massachusetts like me, give us a nice iTunes review. I want maybe one star, five stars. I'll take that. Five stars are good for me.
Okay.
Why not, right?
Well, thank you all so much once again. For now, I'm Mary.
My name's Blake.
And we are still here.